My independent study was titled That Was the Anomaly Year, an exploration of school discipline and disproportionality during the COVID-19 pandemic. Let's begin with a little bit of background about school discipline before the pandemic. School discipline is incredibly important because it's necessary in order to promote a safe learning environment where all students can learn. But it's also important to allow students to make mistakes, to misbehave sometimes, and to develop and learn from the experience. Sometimes school discipline does not allow students to do this. Sometimes school discipline is too harsh. Shocking statistics from the U.S. Department of Education tell us that in the year 2000, over 3 million students were suspended from American public schools, and that over 97,000 students were expelled. A 2014 report from the U.S. Department of Education on school discipline tells us that, in some states, suspension rates exceeded 10% of the student population. In the same year, about 7 in 1,000 preschool students were expelled, which was over 3 times the K-12 expulsion rate. This forced removal from school, like suspensions and expulsions, leads to negative outcomes for students. Students who are suspended or expelled are more likely to be held back from school, to be held back a grade, to quit school, to enter the juvenile justice system, and to be arrested as adults. They're also less likely to graduate from high school and less likely to enter college. This data is especially concerning because students can be suspended or even expelled for minor misbehavior. Some shocking examples of students being removed from their classes for minor rule violations include students being suspended for chewing a Pop-Tart into the shape of a gun, students making finger guns, students cursing, pushing, or talking back to their teachers. These horrifying examples show that school rules, and especially zero-tolerance policies that mandate suspension or expulsion for specific rule violations, can sometimes harm the students that they were designed to protect. Another important thing to know about school discipline in America is that there are extreme disproportionalities in who is punished. What this means is that some students are more likely to be disciplined than other students, even if their behaviors are identical. Data has shown that students with special needs are about twice as likely to receive out-of-school suspension than their peers without special needs. And studies also show that Black students are suspended and expelled at about 3 times the rate of their white peers. Black students, Indigenous students, Latina students, and students with disabilities are also all more likely to be suspended and expelled, even arrested and physically restrained in schools. All of this data is shocking, especially considering that there is no evidence to suggest that any demographic groups are more likely to misbehave than their peers who are disciplined less frequently. In addition to this appalling data, this project was inspired by the story of a young Black student in Colorado named Isaiah. Isaiah was working in his virtual classes from home, from his living room couch with his camera on. During his virtual class, Isaiah absentmindedly picked up a green and black toy gun with an orange tip and began to aimlessly pass it from one hand to another. Isaiah's art teacher alerted the vice principal of the school, who called the police department and had them send an officer to Isaiah's home. Isaiah was suspended from school and given a misdemeanor charge by the police department for bringing a facsimile of a gun to school. But Isaiah wasn't at school, was he? What harm could Isaiah have done with an obviously fake toy gun during virtual class? The misdemeanor charge and the suspension will remain on Isaiah's record through middle school and high school. These marks on his record will remain even as he applies to college and moves forward with his life. As I continued to research, I found another story of a Black student in Louisiana who was suspended for picking up a toy BB gun and moving it away from his little brother during a virtual class. I found examples of students being blocked from virtual classes or muted by their teachers for sending too many messages in a chat. I found examples of students being blocked from their online classes even for days at a time without it being coded as a suspension. All of this inspired me to investigate how school discipline has changed with the pandemic. Initially, I wanted to focus on how disciplinary disproportionalities were impacted by a transition to virtual schooling. In other words, were Black students, students with special needs, Latina students, and Indigenous students still more likely to be suspended or expelled from their classes during virtual schooling? Unfortunately, I ran into some issues. I found that there was an extreme lack of data available on school discipline. I looked for data from the U.S. Department of Education and then from individual state departments of education. I applied to access state disciplinary data and reached out via email to a state department of education, but I found that no state or national agency appeared to have much data on suspensions and expulsions during virtual schooling, and that the data I did find were too small for meaningful statistical analysis. As my study developed, I found out that many of my participants were unable or unwilling to talk to me about disciplinary disproportionalities, so I began to study all kinds of issues related to school discipline during virtual schooling. And because of the lack of data, I decided to take a qualitative approach instead of a quantitative one, and I focused on interviews. For my study, I interviewed 6 total participants, 3 from the Dunmar School District in the southeastern United States, and 3 from the Buford School District in the midwestern United States. In the Dunmar District, I interviewed Principal Miller, a white female high school principal in her 50s, Dr. Hawthorne, a white female district employee specializing in data collection and analysis, who was in her 50s, and Dr. Clark, a black female district employee in her 40s, who was responsible for the district's recent code of conduct revisions. In the Buford District, I interviewed Dr. Lindsley, a white male in his 50s who worked as a high-ranking administrator in the district. I also interviewed Dr. Collins, a white man in his 50s, working as a school resource officer in the district, and Mr. Bell, a white man in his 40s, who taught at a middle school in the district. The most significant findings from my study fall into 3 general categories: surveillance and disciplinary power, codes of conduct, and data. First, surveillance and disciplinary power. With the shift to virtual schooling, schools have been forced to find new ways to monitor students and their behavior. Between my interviews and investigations of schools' code of conduct, I found out more about how schools are applying and enforcing school rules off campus. For example, both school districts in my study required all students to abide by the code of conduct while they are in the classroom, but did not define the term classroom. Normally, it might not be necessary to define classroom, but during virtual schooling, what a classroom is has changed dramatically. Should students be subject to all of the same school rules, whether they are physically at school or at home on the couch? One of my interview participants, Principal Miller, told me that she thinks that when students are punished for their behaviors off campus, it creates disproportionality because black students are more likely to be caught and punished than their white peers. If this is true, this would suggest that schools should rethink how they practice discipline during virtual schooling. In order to enforce school rules during virtual schooling, school officials need to monitor students to make sure that they're following the rules. In order to do this, I found that the school districts in my study were recording every virtual class session. Some schools required students to keep their cameras on during virtual classes as well. This leads to privacy concerns for many families because some families do not want schools watching them in their private residences. This also has the potential to create a lot of stress for some families. A number of my participants mentioned that some families, and especially low-income families, did not want school officials in their district to visit their homes because they feel that it violates their privacy. If families don't want school officials to visit their homes, they almost certainly don't want school employees to record video of them and their children while they're in their own homes. One of my participants, Dr. Lindsley, also informed me that the Buford District is monitoring student media, social media profiles. This could also lead to privacy concerns for students and raises the question, should school districts be allowed to use social media posts as evidence that students are breaking school rules? Finally, my participant in the Buford District, Dr. Lindsley, and another participant, Officer Collins, informed me that the Buford District is making more home visits with school resource officers than they ever have in the past. This could be problematic considering the conflicting research on how school resource officers impact students. Some studies suggest that the presence of school resource officers is damaging for student outcomes, as it can increase suspension, expulsion, and arrest rates in schools. All of the participants in my study told me that there was not a lot of discipline happening in their schools. None of them reported any suspensions or expulsions. However, Dr. Lindsley told me that in the Buford District, students are being removed from their virtual classes almost every day, sometimes up to a day or even longer because of disciplinary problems. Next, codes of conduct. The first thing that's important to know about public school codes of conduct is that some of the code of conduct is written by the state legislature. Dr. Lindsley told me that almost all of the Buford District's code of conduct was written by the state. Dr. Clark in the Dunmar District seemed to think differently about her district's code of conduct. Dr. Clark told me that while the state established some guidelines, the district had a lot of autonomy to establish their own code within the state requirements. For example, while the state mandates that students caught fighting must be suspended for 10 days to a year at the principal's discretion, the Dunmore district has now established more specific rules, so that if a student is caught fighting, they must be suspended for a specific length of time, depending on the severity of any injuries resulting from the fight. The Dunmore district has a code of conduct that is 100 pages long and has very specific consequences for specific rule violations. The district says that this will help decrease disciplinary disproportionalities in their district. In regard to virtual schooling, however, I found that neither school district mentioned the word virtual, let alone the term virtual schooling, in their codes of conduct. The fact that neither district has specific rules that apply to virtual schooling has the potential to create disciplinary disproportionality, because if there are not specific rules for virtual schooling, school administrators will have to use their own discretion to discipline students during online learning, and, as a few of my participants told me, discretion creates disproportionality. Another interesting finding from my IS had to do with data reporting, data accessibility, and data coding. Throughout my study, I continued to look for quantitative data on school discipline during virtual schooling, but was repeatedly told that disciplinary data was non-existent. At the same time, many of my participants reported that students were still being removed from their virtual classes, even for more than a day at a time. When I asked my participants to talk more about what happens to students who are removed from class and how they code these removals from class, I was told that both districts make an effort to return students to class as soon as possible after they're removed, and that these removals are generally coded as emergency removals. I asked Dr. Hawthorne if I could request access to the Dunmore district's disciplinary data so that I could find out more about these emergency removals, but I was told that this data is not publicly accessible. It's concerning that school districts are blocking students from their virtual classes without calling it a suspension, and that the public does not have access to school disciplinary data. What school discipline means has changed during virtual schooling. The definition of suspension seems to be different during virtual schooling. However, it has not been officially redefined. Similarly, the meaning of attendance has changed during virtual schooling, and truancy has largely dissipated. In both school districts from my study, students have a few different ways to prove that they're present in a given day. Students can attend their virtual classes to be counted as present, but they can also complete assignments, fill out an attendance survey, or call the school to be considered present for a day. The available data appears to indicate that there is not much truancy or discipline during virtual schooling. However, it's clear that students are still being disciplined. Because of the lack of data, there is no evidence to suggest that disciplinary disproportionalities are actually disappearing during virtual schooling. They're just becoming harder to notice. It is my hope that this exploratory study will help to fill a hole in the academic literature about discipline during virtual schooling, and that it will inspire other researchers to investigate disciplinary issues during virtual schooling. Thanks for listening.